If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage. Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation. Deep Space Nine, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
How you doing, Adam?
A little cranky today. I'm trying to figure out why I'm doing that thing that goes like, have I had enough water? I've had some water.
You're going down the crankiness checklist?
Yeah. Did I have a good night's sleep? I think I had a good night's sleep.
Enough protein in your diet?
Yeah, I just had lunch. I don't know what it is. You know what I realized, Ben? Is that I had not yet done a Star Trek podcast with you.
Oh, man. The next thing I was going to think was maybe you were like a little late for your Ketracel White.
Yeah, that's not me. I'm clean.
Oh, shit. You're a straight edge Star Trek podcaster?
Yeah. Well, I mean, not really. I've got the
crazy straw going right into my neck.
Jeez. Tiki drink on one end and neck on the other?
Yeah. Not going to lie, I do have a creme de banane-based cocktail in my hand today.
I have not heard that name of a liqueur in a very long time.
Yeah. Creme de banane was like one of the beloved repeat guests on my cocktail podcast, Let's Drink About It.
I know. That was... Creme de banane is one of the reasons that we're friends. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think it is too. I discovered a twist on a Mai Tai that uses creme de banane as one of the sweet elements of it. It's called a banana hammock, and I really like it.
That's a pretty good name. I was going to guess my banane, as in get your hands off my banane. That's my banane.
You can invent a cocktail and call it that. I would encourage you to do so.
That would require me going and getting a bottle of creme de banane, and I haven't had one of those in the house in a very long time.
Yeah, probably not since I left one there for a long time, right?
And then I took that thing to the dome, as I remember. That's how I finished it.
Pretty rough.
That's how you show respect to Big Banane.
Yeah.
Is you tip it up.
Well, there are... That was a bottle of the kind of creme de banane that comes in a plastic bottle and has a neon color scheme. Like, I mean, if we're going to relate this back to Star Trek, one of the things that is crazy about Star Trek is the colors of beverages are often incredibly synthetic looking.
Mm-hmm.
I think that these people that live in a paradise would not put up with these super fake looking drinks.
I come down on the other side of this. I feel like if you are in that kind of universe with the abilities to make things look beautiful, wouldn't you press harder to make the things that you eat and drink as beautiful as possible?
I don't think that they're beautiful. I don't think I've seen a single drink on Star Trek that was really aesthetically pleasing.
Oh, I think the standard of beauty has done changed.
Yeah.
It's probably what it is.
I think I'm all about that natural beauty in a cocktail.
That drink looks great without makeup.
So yeah, but the creme de banane I used is the fancy stuff, the banane du Brésil, which tastes like a Tastes like Bananas Foster, not like Laffy Taffy banana flavor.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't even know. I think all I've ever had is Laffy Taffy banana.
Oh, man, you got to come over.
I really do, huh?
You got to get down here so we can thrash this Millennium Falcon. That's what you got to do.
I was just talking about that project with our DP last night.
Yeah.
Who asked about it, and I said, here's what I told him. He asked where we were on that, and I said, well, for a while, we were at the script phase, and now I think we've thrown that out and instead are just into a more of a technical short film. But the one hurdle is the same hurdle we've always had, is we need someone in the greater Los Angeles area who has a drained pool.
Yeah.
In which to do the experiment in. I think that's when I think about the location we'd need to do this project, that's the only idea I have. We need a drained pool. It's got to catch all the pieces.
It's got to catch all the pieces, except for the problem is we've introduced glass to the equation, and nobody likes glass and pools being combined.
I know. Should we disintroduce the glass?
I don't know. My primary association with this is the time in high school I was like at some kid's house party that I probably wasn't technically invited to, but I was there,
mm-hmm.
and walked past their parents' hot tub where a bunch of kids were in the hot tub, and my shoe grazed a bong that was on the pool deck and knocked it over, shattered the bong, and dumped all the bong water into the hot tub with a bunch of kids that were far cooler than me and now had a reason to hate my rotten guts.
At the same time, Ben, I think you understand their hate in that moment.
No, they were right. They were
hot.
They
bong water is probably the worst thing I can imagine.
They were cooler than me, and I was a bad person that night.
Were you carrying like two-liter bottles of chew spit and like fell into the hot tub along with them?
Yeah, I had a 2 liter of chew spit in one hand and a flaming paper bag full of dog poo in the other hand.
Yeah, you flipped ass over tea kettle, went into the hot tub, and then just started violently throwing up
and pissing.
Yeah. You're not going to make many friends like that, Ben.
You know what, man? We just rent a studio. There's going to be some studio that has an open floor, and we can just, take reasonable precautions to keep the pieces together.
All right.
Do it that way.
All right.
The pool has got to be taken out of the equation because it's a dime holding up a dollar.
Well, I mean, one way the pool works, and then I'm totally up for turning my back on the pool idea, is if this is a pool that has been drained and ahead of its own decommissioning. Like, if this is a pool that's going to be redone or filled with dirt or whatever, like, that would be a pretty great situation. Then we can do what we will in the pool. Or like a skate park, like a skate park bowl. Wouldn't that work? That kind of pool?
I guess.
And then we sweep up the pieces, and then we're good to go.
How about this? For less than $300 on Amazon, you can get a 15-foot diameter above-ground pool.
Hmm. That's not too costly, given what we're into this project for.
That's less than the fucking Lego kit.
And less than what we're paying the DP.
Yeah.
I really tried to get his number down last night over an evening of daiquiris.
Yeah, what is this going to cost us?
I'm hopeful that it's not much. He doesn't know that, though.
Wow, I'm really excited for what happens to my online shopping algorithm now that I've put above ground pool into the search bar on Amazon.
you can't control forces outside your ability, Ben, and that's really, I think, what this episode is about today.
Mm.
As we discuss Deep Space Nine Season 4, Episode 22, To the Death. And it's another LeVar Burton episode, Ben.
Yeah, I noticed that.
He's been getting a lot of work.
Do you realize realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
The little D has been harassing Breen pirates around some Bajoran planet. Did you get the sense that they were in the G-Quad here?
I did. This is one of those...
I don't think they ever come out and say it, but...
Yeah.
But we know that the Bajorans have done some colonizing on the other side.
Yeah. This is one of those opens that makes me want to watch that episode. Like, driving away Breen privateers.
Yeah.
I want to see Breen ships. I want to see them driven away.
The little D is in perfect shape, so maybe it wasn't that interesting of a dilemma.
Right.
They just went and showed the flag, and the Breens all shit themselves and flew away.
Yeah, and the tone in the mess hall seems to be pretty positive also, which would indicate that wasn't a big deal to them.
I wouldn't sit there if I were you.
Why? Miles spilled something again.
It is really business as usual, like we're just having lunch, no big whoop.
Do you think Worf hates everyone moving into his, basically his quarters when they go out on missions?
Yeah. Do you think he's got like the 3-day rule for missions on the little D? Like, okay, you guys can come over and fly the ship around, but you got like you either check into a hotel or you find something else to do after the third night.
I mean, that's what you or I would do.
Yeah.
As evangelists of the 3-day rule. Absolutely. Yeah,
as misanthropes that nonetheless have to live in society.
Right.
Like Worf.
Yeah. I mean, they make a little bit of this in this scene, in that, you know, Bashir's, sitting in Worf's seat, what's he gonna do?
Yeah.
But, like, I think this was an opportunity to talk a little bit more about how weird it must be for Worf that all of a sudden, from time to time, his apartment is full of people.
Yeah, and fighting a pirate.
Yeah.
Worf sits down with his prune juice in the seat that Bashir has vacated, and with almost comedic timing, Sisko hits the red alert and orders the senior staff to the bridge. And that's really when my confusion about the timing of this meal took a firm grip, because they just got back to the station. Like, this is not when the in-flight meal service starts. This is when they start stowing the carts and making sure everybody's seat back is in an upright position.
Right. This is a tray tables up. Yeah. Period of time. What are they
doing?
I mean,
in a perfect world, everybody's seat back would be in an upright position for the entire flight, but some people can't experience freedom without abusing it.
You know, I think I just realized why Worf is so upset. He's seeing everyone eat in the mess hall, and he knows they're going to be back at DS9 in moments. He's going to have to clean up all their shit. Like at the end of a party when everyone leaves, he's got to take out all the garbage.
You sure there's nothing we can do?
No!
On the bridge, they look through the view screen and see that Deep Space Nine has had a pylon amputated, and it's floating in space along with a bunch of other pieces of debris. And inside, it's not any better because it's girders and bodies all the way down.
That's not good. We got to replace that post.
They have been attacked by the Jem'Hadar.
I really thought that this sequence was great. They really did a great job of establishing the fear and chaos of the immediate aftermath of a situation like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's smoke everywhere and pipes dangling out of the ceilings, people running around in the background. Like, they threw as many extras at this scene as you need.
Right.
And that's like security people running back and forth, maintenance people running back and forth, people with hamburger all over them lying against the bulkheads, and we get to see like the doctor leap into action. Kira's sustained a pretty gnarly looking arm injury and is nonetheless like running the show and giving updates to Sisko and Dax.
It was a Jem'Hadar strike team. They beamed aboard from a civilian transport, disabled communications and weapons, set off an explosive device in upper pylon 3.
I thought it was interesting that Odo, like, you gotta catch things like this, Odo.
Right. It doesn't sound like they could have done much because the raid happened so suddenly, and because these are Jem'Hadar, you know, they sort of uncloak themselves and run around the station. And what they did is they stole a bunch of shit while they were over there. They They basically slashed, burned, and stole, and then left, and it was all over fairly quickly.
Odo was in Keiko's classroom holding an upside-down copy of The Pet Goat while all this was happening.
My Pet Goat?
Isn't it The Pet Goat?
I don't think it is.
Whatever.
As a collector of 9/11 trivia, I could never forget the name of that
title.
Oh,
boy, I just hope somebody tells me I'm wrong on the internet. Oh.
I love this pivot because it's like DS9's been fucked up. Let's take the fight back to them. Yeah. And they basically like back the car right out of the garage.
We're going to go fucking hoo-ride on those motherfuckers.
I need your help. I can't tell you what it is. You can never ask me about it later. And we're going to hurt some people. Whose car are we going to take?
It's great.
Yeah. And the idea is that there's like an ion trail that the ship would have left. And it's fresh enough that they can go, that they can actually go track them. So they head right back out. And they are spoiling for full-blown combat with this kind of terroristically oriented cell of Jem'Hadars.
Worf stops off at Quark's before leaving, and Quark is like, what are you going to do if you find one of those ticks?
And then he got this funny look on his face. He put down his prune juice, looked me right in the eye, and then he said...
Yeah, I hope I do. But they do find a damaged tick, and it looks like it's got one of its legs ripped off.
Yeah, and... You know, even with one of its legs ripped off, it's still over 76% combat effective.
Still very disgusting.
It's not the ship that they're looking for, because they were led to believe that the Jem'Hadars that did the crime were kind of, they were using like civilian-looking craft, and this is all very interesting that they would find an actual Jem'Hadar warship that's damaged like this. It's about to go critical, too, so they've got to rescue its crew.
Sisko's super true to himself here as someone who misplaces his trust. Fresh off of the Eddington debacle, he's like, well, if there are Jem'Hadar survivors, the only thing that we can do is beam them aboard the Little D. And so he does, and he like rings the transporter pad with security people in a Revolutionary War stance.
Transporter Protocol 5.
Front line on one knee, and then back line standing up.
Yeah, they're going for the volley fire technique.
Yeah, and so they beam these Jem'Hadar aboard, and a tiny voice from behind speaks for the group, and it's Weyoun, Ben.
I really like how the Jem'Hadar beam aboard with rifle hands, except for they don't have rifles.
They're doing pantomime rifle hand.
Even without weapons, we're more than a match for you.
And Weyoun's a Vorta, and we recognize people like him. They're sort of the three tiers. It goes Jem'Hadar, Vorta, Founder.
Right.
When we're talking about the Dominion hierarchy.
Yeah. More of a diplomat than a Jem'Hadar could ever be, but... You know, kind of an operator, kind of a con artist.
The Jem'Hadar are like fruits and vegetables. The Vorta are like meats and grains. And then fats and oils would be the founders, which I guess makes sense because they look like fats and oils.
Right. And unfortunately, the Dominion pyramid was done with mainly industry assistance.
Right.
So. It doesn't actually have anything to do with the way you should set up your own society.
The way you want your quadrant is going to be a little different if you do so independently.
Well, and all the subsidies in the farm bill lead there to be a glut of Jem'Hadar, which really are kind of like the last thing that you should be considering eating if you can avoid it.
Yeah.
Gul Dukat.
So...
To enjoy this episode, I think you really need to ignore the choices that Captain Sisko makes early on. One of them is taking a private audience with Weyoun, like immediately.
Like, the first thing he offers is, what if you were in charge of the entire Federation?
Absolute ruler.
Well, that's an interesting description that Weyoun gives him, because he sort of is president of the Federation at Deep Space Nine in that area of the quadrant, right? And that's my main problem with him being alone with Weyoun, is like the threat of assassination would be pretty deeply felt if he were to take a shot here. And it seems pretty easy to do.
Weyoun doesn't seem like the assassinating type, though.
No, he's playing 10 steps ahead.
Yeah, I mean, what he would like to suggest is that they work together, because what has happened is the terrorist Jem'Hadar that blew up the station and stole all the stuff have discovered, or have actually taken over, an Iconian gateway. And this is a throwback to a TNG episode.
A probe has been launched from Iconia. I'm going to capture it.
No, sir, wait!
This goes way back.
Way back. A Star Empire that existed long, long ago. And the way the Iconians got around was not via starship, but via these gateways that they would put on different planets. And the concern that Weyoun has is that some Jem'Hadar that have no loyalty to the Dominion have taken over this gateway and are trying to kind of reboot it. And if they do, nobody will be able to stop these like bad Jem'Hadars that have no oversight from just taking over everything that they can get to via this gateway.
This is our concern, dude.
And it's here that they mutually agree that this gateway needs to be destroyed and they need to work together to do it. This gateway here and now being on Vandross 4. Here and now. So they head out and I guess come up with the plan to destroy it en route, which is great, right?
Yeah. The planning is mostly done between Weyoun and the Federations on board. Like, it's a lot is made of, like, don't tell the Jem'Hadars that we're with about this gateway because they might love the idea of having the gateway too. And so that like makes that an interesting information imbalance between the Starfleets and the Jem'Hadar.
It feels like every time the Jem'Hadar underestimated, they make you look foolish for doing so, though, you know?
Yeah.
Like they're treated like these third class citizens by everyone, and like velociraptors in Jurassic Park, like they always escape, they always kill. They always know more than they betray, you know?
Clever girl.
Yeah, I was really surprised to hear the description of them, like, having this technical project underway of, like, stealing a bunch of complicated-sounding equipment so that they could plug it into the gateway and see if they could get it working again.
When you put a bunch of Jem'Hadar next to an Iconian gateway, you can tell they're trying to figure it out.
Yeah. There's also a bunch of the classic Jem'Hadar kind of like really eager to measure their dicks against Worf's, which I think we've seen before. Like,
you're going to need two if you want to do that.
The warrior curiosity. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, or they could just kind of like slot it in between his two.
You know what? Your measurement's probably more accurate. It's a real measure twice, see if you're cut once situation.
That's how my father always did it.
Now when you're measuring penises against another warrior race, you're going to want to measure from the base. And by that I mean the base of your testicles.
We're going to snap a chalk line to make sure our measurement is straight. Anyways. But Worf has like kind of an interesting role here, because he's a TNG guy.
I was on the mission that discovered the Iconian home world.
So he can talk about like what it was like when they first found Iconian ruins in the episode that established the existence of this phenomenon. And he's also like really against concealing the nature of the mission from the Jem'Hadar.
Right.
It is not honorable.
Which I can totally get with. This is, I love that sensibility.
Yeah. O'Brien doesn't give a shit.
No, he doesn't.
O'Brien's primary concern is that they might have like a get-to-know-you buffet later, and he hates that. He's right. On the record as having never become an officer because he hates that.
This is a Worf episode that really reminds me of Worf episodes deep in the past of TNG, where he would often be the guy that other people tried to rile up.
Yeah.
And that is what the Jem'Hadar do throughout this episode. Let's try to get his goat. Get his two goats.
He's like the big guy at the bar that
all the
college boys are trying to pick fights with.
Right.
Because they're hormonal and drunk.
Right. They can't just roll up and orbitally bombard the Vandross planet because the love is incredibly deep. How deep is your love? And their quantum torpedoes would not be able to both destroy the ziggurat base that houses the Iconian gate and destroy everything and everyone there. Like, they just don't have the firepower to do it. So they got to go in and beam down and do this personally.
It's the only way to be sure.
Fucking A.
They are not sending them in with cameras.
Uh-huh.
They're going to be more than just taking pictures.
Right.
They use the euphemism supply cache every time they talk about the gateway in the presence of the Jem'Hadar.
Yeah.
And they start to have like joint meetings where they're discussing, you know, what they're up against. And one of the, I think the number one Jem'Hadar guy says that like they're up against a force of like 150 guys, which is pretty intense.
That is more than they had in the mess hall earlier.
Oh, man. Ometiklon, the number one guy there, is played by Clarence Williams III, who is a great working actor. He was in Lee Daniels' The Butler.
Oh, yeah.
He was like the Jamaican drug dealer in Half-Baked.
Wow.
Remember that guy?
Yes.
What part of Jamaica?
Right near the beach.
It was that guy.
Wow. What a great that guy. LeVar Burton said he always wanted to work with him and was like, what are you doing? Do you want to be on Star Trek? And he just made it happen.
That's rad.
Yeah.
And then he's and like after hour five in the makeup chair, he's like, LeVar!
We are no longer friends.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pale,
Mr. Bucket, I have to revert back to my latent state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
The threats and challenges to Worf keep coming, and eventually Sisko has to say, like, okay, you guys, like, you guys are gonna have like a pretty major commando assault on your hands, so why don't we not fight for now and save it for later? Smash cut to Worf, like, beating the shit out of a Jem'Hadar in the hallway on the Defiant.
This scene really surprised me because seeing this guy in the hallway armed surprised me.
Yeah, this is great, like, narrative sleight of hand. You know, I think it was a commercial break that they go to, and then you come back and you see a Jem'Hadar with a rifle in the hallway and Worf kicking his ass, and then Dax, O'Brien, and Worf like running into the engineering section of the little D, killing more Jem'Hadar. And I think at this point you realize this is an exercise. They're training, but, you know, they can't find the third guy they want to kill, and the lights eventually go up, and Ometiklon and Weyoun and Sisko are up on the second level going like, you're all dead. This did not go well. and there is like there's kind of like a difference in the fundamental combat ethos of the Jem'Hadar and the Federation.
Right.
The Jem'Hadar are like, so you set the explosives, and if you can't confirm that you've cleared the room of anybody that could potentially turn the explosives off, you just sit around and babysit them until they go off. And, you know, Dax and O'Brien are like, question. What if we don't want to get blown to smithereens? And Ometiklon's like, you don't? What?
I mean, this is part of the problem with having to conceal the true nature of the mission from people, in that Ben Sisko knows and Ometiklon knows that to allow the the gateway to fall into the hands of the wrong people would mean, like, everyone loses everything forever. And for either side of the away team to not consider death to be on the line for the sake of the mission,
yeah,
is, I don't, that's not what you want to do when the stakes are this high.
Right. I mean, the stakes are super high, but I think part of the issue is that Omediclon knows more than Wayun and Sisko realize.
Yeah.
They get on that turbo lift, and Omediclon is like, yeah, I know about the gateway. Duh.
Yeah.
And that does kind of like change the math on everything. Because like, I think that Sisko, up until this point, is probably considering the Jem'Hadar to be as expendable as possible. Like, mm-hmm. hopefully, like, a lot of them die on this mission so that I don't have to deal with having them on my ship ever again.
Right. It's less irritating to dole out the milk from time to time.
Milk was a bad choice.
There is, like, a strategic advantage here, right? That, like, if there can be a joint Federation-Dominion operation, maybe there is... that forms a toehold that a peace can be built off of.
Right.
It's kind of a long shot, obviously, because the Dominion are like an expansionist imperialist power, and the Federation are more of like a invite them in kind of a deal.
Sure.
But, you know, it'd be good if they could at least have a diplomatic relationship.
Right. And this scene in the turbo lift is fairly crucial, because once the playing field has been leveled for those at the top, like, one would assume that the true stakes of the matter are disseminated to everyone.
Right. But like, Omediclon is like super loyal in a way that the Jem'Hadar that have taken the gateway are not. So like, the math is not, you know, like, Wayun was worried about him finding out about it, because he's like, oh, if he finds out that the Jem'Hadar could just be like an independent takeover force for the whole galaxy.
Right.
Why does he need me? And it turns out that that is not the way this guy is thinking about the situation at all.
But the fact is, we're more loyal to the Founders than the Vorta ever will be.
It's hard for me to figure out the Jem'Hadar's allegiances, because it seems to me that it is more that they feel things very deeply and quickly,
yeah,
than it is they feel a greater allegiance to the Founders than anyone else could possibly do. Like, if the Jem'Hadar on the planet surface had at one time felt the same way about the Founders and they changed their minds, like, wouldn't this be a possibility for every Jem'Hadar?
I think that this episode actually deals with that in an interesting and subtle way, which is, I think the previous time we've seen a lot of Ketracel White business taking place, it was like they were like withdrawing and then finally getting their hands on some white and, you know, suddenly like feeling okay.
Mm-hmm.
These are Jem'Hadar that are accustomed to a steady supply of it because they are super loyal. And whenever we see them talking about going into combat, or especially about when we see them having their Ketracel White, it does not feel like junkies slamming heroin. It feels like members of a religious cult performing a sacrament.
Right.
And I think that that goes a long way toward satisfying that issue, is they are true believers. Like, the white is a system of control, but they also are true believers on top of that.
How long are we going to have to wait before we see a fight scene where the straw gets ripped out of someone's neck and then squirts the guy in the face? Do you think we're going to see that within the next season?
That would be the first thing I would grab for, you know?
That's what I'm saying.
Like Bobby Hill saying,
"That's my purse! I don't know you!"
If it doesn't happen by the end of season 5, I just can't even, Ben. Just can't even.
I really liked the scene with Dax and the one guy talking about their relative ages. And he's saying like, oh yeah, I'm like 8 and 20 is pretty old for us.
Yeah.
And Then he turns it around like, how old are you?
I stopped counting at 300.
This guy had been staring at Dax for 2 hours before she said something.
Yeah, I think you got to speak up, Dax.
I think her capacity for this shit is a little extreme.
Yeah, but when 300 years old you reach, yeah, have as much capacity, you will not.
Mm-hmm.
No sleep, no food, no women. No wonder you're so angry.
What are you doing now? Exactly.
We cut basically directly to the mess hall at a point where Dax has just told Worf, O'Brien, and Odo all the shit that she's learned from this guy.
Yeah.
And everyone is incredulous about it.
Yeah. This is like a pretty long scene with a bunch of beats, and one of the beats is the Ketracel White distribution, and one of the beats is a bar brawl that breaks out between one of the Jem'Hadars and Worf. He starts swinging on him, and I kind of wanted to just see the circle form and, you know, everybody let the two of them fight it out mano a mano.
It's going down now.
Yeah, but this isn't Star Trek Discovery.
This is that muscle face guy, I think.
Yeah.
Brian Thompson, the muscle face man from
X-Files.
From X-Files.
This is one of those scenes that demonstrates the differences between the two cultures, militarily or otherwise, because, you know, it's sort of like the camp counselors break into the cabin and they're like, who started this shit?
Yeah.
And both Worf and Tormund Torax raise their hands and they're like, yeah, we were the ones that fought. And so a Metaclon breaks Tormund Torax's neck, then gestures to Sisko like, your turn, dude.
Yeah.
It's your turn to break Worf's neck. And then Sisko administers the neck break of administrative discipline by like sending him to his quarters.
Yeah. He makes him sit facing the corner for the rest of the mission.
And Ometaclon takes great umbrage with this.
Great umbrage.
I really like the actor who plays Ometaclon and his ability to just make his eyes wet.
Yeah.
When he's feeling a certain way, because he is feeling that way at Ben Sisko.
I mean, I think it's a little bit of a, your buddy says, like, hey, we're going to all go jump in this lake, and you run and jump in, and then you turn around and realize that your buddy is still on the dock. He did not, in fact, jump in, and he's like, ew, that water's gross. Because Ometaclon snapped his buddy's neck, and Sisko sent Worf to his room.
Sisko's looking at Ometaclon like he just broke a glass bong next to a jacuzzi.
Yeah. Ometaclon's like, what the fuck, man? I thought we were disciplining these guys.
Yeah.
You sent him to his room? That's where he wants to be.
Yeah.
And he issues a promise in this moment to Sisko. Like, once we are done destroying the gateway and raiding this ziggurat, I'm going to kill you next.
Ben Sisko does not seem to take this seriously.
Yeah, I mean,
stoically, I guess, is how he takes it.
Right. I think that, threatening the life of the guy that you're teaming up with is not a great way to build, like, esprit de corps. But you could forgive Ometaclon for being a guy that's kind of tactics obsessed at the expense of strategy.
Right. This is a part of the episode that has a lot of emotional leverage being put into play, because there's a scene with Ometaclon and Sisko, but there's also Weyoun at Odo. And Weyoun is convincing Odo that it might be a good idea to go jump into the Golden Lake.
Yeah.
Because they all really miss him there. And Odo is not even trying to hear that.
Boy, I loved the camera direction in this scene, because it is just like camera steadily getting closer and closer to each actor's face. The way you pitch of like, you should go reconnect with your people. And by the end, it is like ECUs on both of them. And Odo is just shutting it down.
Are you ready to go home? No, but I am ready to
to end this conversation.
But like you can feel like the emotional heft of every phrase in the back and forth.
Yeah, it's pretty deft direction by LeVar Burton here. And it's on paper just two guys in a hallway, but
yeah,
he's able to evoke something powerful here with camera direction. And I think that shows a person who's growing more and more comfortable in the director role.
I think it's both camera and performance because, you know, I think Jeffrey Combs and Renee Auberjonois give very subtle facial performances in this scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, both acting through a fairly heavy amount of loaf. But, you know, Jeffrey Combs, an actor who has lived many lives on Star Trek and, mm-hmm. you know, we know as Brunt. But it's fun how far from Brunt this character is.
Yeah.
Like how different of a guy they can trust him with.
Yeah.
And yeah, I really like that scene. I think that it kind of makes the case for that character in that moment.
Wayoon is low-key maybe one of the most interesting characters we've gotten in a long time because he is stepping to someone that he regards as a god with a suggestion. And then he also tells Odo that he cannot be lied to by him.
Yeah.
And so don't even try. And yet at the same time is totally deferential in the next breath and then withdraws. There's so much going on here with him. I really like that performance.
Yeah, me too. There are a couple more beats before the big raid. One is Chief O'Brien and Dax talking over their various strategies for sending I'm dead letters to their families. And O'Brien is kind of like, just keep having to write this letter. Keep feeling like the last time I might do it. And Dax is kind of like goofing on him a little bit. And then she's like, oh, yeah, I wrote one too.
O'Brien's like, you know, the worst part about having a pregnant wife is that you need to re-record your death letter in order to like say something nice about the unborn child.
Yeah. I had a great one for years, and now there's another kid. Jesus.
Every time you get a new haircut, you got to change that video message.
This is the one they're going to end up hearing.
He does have a kind of a new haircut in this, doesn't he?
Do you think he just deep fakes Tasha Yar's video message? Like, Keiko watches the video, and she's like, why is he saying so much about Data?
Why does he have boobs?
This is fucking spectacular.
I like this moment. Dax supremely confident that O'Brien is going to live and die an old man, which doesn't give me much comfort, the way that she describes O'Brien will die.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to die in bed surrounded by my friends and family. I'm just going to put that out into the universe right now.
Wow. As your last will and testament, this episode of your Star Trek podcast.
that's awful.
I don't think it's legally binding, my friend.
Someone will put together a supercut of just all of the shitty things I've ever said in 280 episodes.
Yeah.
This is what he was really like. You won't even need to show up, Ben.
Oh, thank you. It's good because I have something that day.
Yeah.
I would love to be there, honestly, but I can't get out of it. Because I planned it ahead of time, you know, prior obligation.
The rules of the grounding of Worf are fairly inscrutable to me because in this next scene, Worf has escaped his quarters.
It looks like you got a little lost.
In order to tell Ben Sisko that he knows that Omedaclon has threatened to kill him.
I didn't know that was public knowledge.
And to promise Sisko that he will kill Omedaclon if he's successful.
And also to say, like, don't go on this mission. Don't be the dumb captain that goes on the away mission.
I thought for sure the punishment would be putting him in his quarters for the duration of the mission. Like, those words. And yet Worf goes on this mission.
Yeah, I mean, he's been doing the training, and when they beam down to the planet, Worf's utility as a sword fighter becomes immediately apparent. But I don't want to jump ahead too far.
You don't want to jump past this next scene, Ben.
Yeah.
Everyone gets a phaser rifle. You get a phaser rifle. You get a phaser rifle. Everyone gets them.
Just look under your seat, and there's a fully charged phaser rifle. The Jem'Hadar turn off all the safeties. They don't want, they're like, why is there even a stun setting? Who needs it?
Do you think you can affix bayonets to a phaser rifle? It seems like you should be able to do that.
That would be great.
Yeah.
So once Omedicalon has given the order to deactivate safeties and turn the phaser rifles to 11, he gives a little speech to the, to this, you know, mixed task force of Jem'Hadar and Starfleet's, and the thrust of it is, we dead, let's go fight to get our lives back.
As of this moment, we are all dead.
Because we've heard them say victory is life, but I really like the idea that they consider themselves to be dead before they go into combat, and if combat goes well, then they can still be alive. That's a great character detail for the Jem'Hadar.
Agreed. It feels a little Klingon warrior adjacent, too, in a way that I kind of wished I got more recognition from Worf in this moment.
Yeah, like if he had whipped just one of them out and kind of stroked it while he was saying that.
Yeah, yeah. Just got one halfway there.
Can you get one boner and one not boner going if you're a Klingon, or do they both go hard if you're excited?
This is deeply embarrassing.
This never happens. I'm just nervous because you're so beautiful.
I'm sure that you've noticed I've had much to drink.
This is, as they refer to it, blood, wine, dick.
I love Kern has one blood, wine, dick. Just one.
Yeah.
You know what? You can still get the job done with one.
Yeah.
One in your face. O'Brien, not to be outdone in the best man speech department, steps up to the mic and gives his own. And it is so in keeping with his character. I feel like our entire relationship with him has led to this moment. Because he totally rides that line of, he wants to say something inspiring. He knows he's incapable. He wants to take the moment seriously, but he also wants to be self-deprecating. And he somehow does all of this without really making fun of anyone else or himself. It's almost entirely neutral, but it is also hilarious.
I am Chief Miles Edward O'Brien. I'm very much alive, and I intend to stay that way.
It's super well written.
I loved it.
Yeah.
And it's an integral part of his character for a lot of reasons on this show.
Morn. Dear sweet. Morn.
In here, buddy.
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
So we get to see the ziggurat finally.
Right.
And it looks like they built a big thing.
It looks like it's been standing always and forever on Vandross 4. I want to know more about these Iconians, Ben, and this is not the episode for that.
No.
Really?
It's not really the series for that.
No.
If there had been another Iconian episode in TNG, you can bet we would have learned a lot about them.
Right. And without working rifles, they are immediately descended upon by the Jem'Hadar who were there, and they've got edged melee weapons, Ben.
Yeah.
Good thing Worf brought his. Good thing Worf is there.
Right. I would say that this surprise attack is surprisingly easily repelled, given how badly they got the drop on them.
And how badly we know they're outnumbered, right?
Right. It seems like these guys with the swords were ready and waiting, and yet they did not bring enough guys to totally overwhelm. You know, a couple of the Jem'Hadar and a couple of the Starfleets get taken out, but for the most part, it's like a minor setback at worst. But the raid really gets exciting at this point, because it is just a lot of running and, you know, fighting and like providing cover for a group of people while another group of people run down a hallway. The music is really exciting. It's a really fun and well executed action sequence.
It's great. I mean, this is an episode that promised something violent and bold here. Yeah. And we get a lot of that. But I read about the production of this episode and the production of this scene specifically.
Uh-huh.
And no one in production was happy with it. Because for the first time on Deep Space Nine and maybe in Star Trek television history, this scene was censored for violence.
Wow.
There was almost a minute of it cut out for such explicit violence. And
damn.
I wish we got a chance to see that version of the episode. It's a version of the episode that shows Dax killing 10 people, Sisko killing 7, and the depiction of 32 Jem'Hadar deaths were cut out of this episode.
Wow.
And I'll save some of this for the did you like portion of the episode, but I think that really matters if you're doing the math on the danger of this and just how, you know, you front load the episode with how outnumbered you are, and then you're just able to tear through their defenses, the defenses of a superior army, like, so easily.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the idea that they become stormtroopers that you can kind of easily mow down is an interesting problem, right? Because the Jem'Hadar have felt very scary. And I think that the way this episode works makes the case for this would have been tough to do if you didn't, like, if Dax and Worf weren't like really seasoned sword fighters.
Right.
And there wasn't a bunch of Jem'Hadars on the Federation side in this raid, this probably wouldn't have worked, right?
Yeah.
And so if they're just mowing through people, I feel like it makes the threat of the Jem'Hadar seem less scary overall.
Yeah, it's true. And it just doesn't seem that's what the intention of this episode was. This episode was meant to raise the threat level of the Jem'Hadar.
Right.
It is the reason for our existence.
Well, they make it to this gateway, and it's doing the thing where it just kind of is cycling through all of the places you can go. It's always kind of like, it looks kind of like a drone shot of a bunch of different like city skylines and mountains and stuff. It never looks like you could just walk through and be like at ground level. It always looks like you would probably fall like 200 feet before you hit the ground.
They put up like a cone or like a road sign.
Yeah.
In front of it.
Watch for falling Starfleets.
Yeah. It seems like in the Star Trek library, they should have 100 matte paintings for scenes to use in the Iconian gateway. And it only seems like in this case, there are, I don't know, 5 or 6 flashing by.
And like Seattle and Paris are definitely among them.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that is like, hey, how likely is it that like 2 of the 9 things that the Iconians could travel to were just contemporary Earth cities?
Right.
That's too bad.
Yeah, if you could go anywhere in the universe, I don't think Seattle would be one of your picks.
Oh, it would certainly be one of mine. I love Seattle.
Worf has an Odo bag, and I love this scene.
Yeah.
You knew Odo was going to be on this mission somewhere.
He was not going to stay back on the little D.
Yeah.
He knocks out some Jem'Hadars, and that's probably got to be awesome for them, right?
Yeah, touched by God's tentacles. Yeah.
Like knocked unconscious by God tentacles is a great way to go out.
Odo is really Benny Hinning himself around inside the ziggurat.
You may not understand this. I don't either.
Amidst all of the excitement, Sisko at one point saves the life of Omediclon, which really impresses Omediclon. He's like, hey, but I told you I was going to kill you later. Why'd you do that? It's like a pretty solid move on your part. And Sisko's like, well, that's my bag. I'm a nice guy, even to assholes like you.
All I do is get my pants pulled down by people I trust. And if I give you enough time, you'll do the same.
Yeah. They set the explosives and they get out of there. And we get the off-screen explosion where they like are back in the forest glade and they shake the camera, and everybody's phasers work again, and it kind of looks like it's about to turn into a Mexican standoff, but instead Weyoun beams down with a Starfleet security guy and his briefcase full of Ketracel White. And they have a little kind of like final moment with each other.
You've all done quite nicely. Now, if you don't mind, I'd like to inspect the wreckage.
Everyone just kind of watches this, mouth agape.
Yeah, I like the one Jem'Hadar runs over and grabs all the Ketracel White and he's like, well, that guy's not going to need this anymore.
That Starfleet security guy that beamed down with Weyoun, like, has a day. Because not only does he have to beam down together with him, which involves a little bit of small talk, I imagine. Like, are you ready to go? You got your baggage and stuff. All right, let's go up to the pad and beam down. Like, they had to
catch
do all
the,
that.
The Mariners game last night.
And then they get down there, and the last person with Weyoun is that guy. And he does not react at all to him being vaporized.
No.
I gotta say, as security officers go, I like how stoic he is. He seems like he's gonna be a good one.
Initially, I thought that might be Muniz, the guy that works on O'Brien's staff, because I think he was just like far back enough in the frame, and he's kind of like got a similar haircut and look to him.
He looks like a slick back who might have grown up. I think he's known the death of a parent or two.
Yeah.
In his past.
So he's kind of like numb to the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seeing a guy vaporized next to him barely moves the needle.
We just totally outlined that guy's character. Nice work, Ben.
You really want to do this here now? Okay. Let's do it. Do it.
Well, the Jem'Hadar declare that enough death has happened that day, so they're not going to murder all the Starfleets, and they're going to stick around and mop up, kill all the remaining Jem'Hadars on the planet. And that's that.
That is that. But did you like the episode, Ben?
I did like the episode. I was surprised to hear the thing you shared about the production team being disappointed with the way the raid came out, because I really liked the raid. I felt like, there's a couple of... You're never going to get as great of fight choreography in a television show as you will in a movie just because of the time constraints of it. But I thought it was like really exciting and kinetic and fun to watch. And I loved the set. Like I feel like there have been so many times when Star Trek has had ruins that we're supposed to believe are super old, and it's just a bunch of like studio flats with gigas glued to them.
Yeah.
And this felt like stone architecture, like all the walls felt thick and substantial, and I thought the set decoration was really on a new level in this episode. And I loved the music. I loved all the like tension in the two crews of teaming up with each other, like the fish out of water stuff with the Jem'Hadar and the kind of accommodating this uncomfortable ally of the Federation felt like a really interesting episode. So on the whole, I really liked it.
Did you think the Jem'Hadar were the Jack Lemmon or the Walter Matthau?
Oh, for sure the Lemmon.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. I'm with you on a lot of those observations. I like episodes that feel like chain of command, and this one did. Like, I like the whole assemble a team and do a raid. And I know you can't do that every week on this show. You can't even do it once a season, really, and I understand why. But I really love Chain of Command, and this episode felt so much like it because I like the experience of knowing more about the Jem'Hadar, and I like knowing what they look like when they're like at their peak, right? Because it feels like every time we've run into them before, it's been that little kid getting loose on the station, or it's like. Or there was that planet of ones who were trying to kick the white.
Candy makes you dandy.
And so we've seen compromised versions of these guys, or we've seen just a swarm of tick ships doing damage. Like, to actually get boots on the ground with them and see them, like, if they're more or less well-run as a brigade. This feels like the first time we've seen that, like, what that looks like. And that is something that really, that is super fearsome.
it's like the dude being chill. Like the dude is we know the dude is chill. That's one fact we know about him, but we never actually see it.
Yeah.
You know, because he's always upset about something.
I'm perfectly calm, dude.
Yeah, waving the fucking gun around?
Calmer than you are.
We know that the Jem'Hadar are terrifying and ruthless, efficient killers, but this is the first time we've actually gotten to check that out.
Had I not read the thing about it being cut for violence, I think I would be more fully throated with how much I like the episode. But knowing that irritates me. I wish we saw the bloodbath version of this episode, and I wonder if on DVD or something those scenes exist, or on YouTube if they exist, because I'd like to figure out how much differently I feel about the climax of this episode having seen them just lay waste to 30 more people. Like, do I feel bad about that? Does it change how I feel about Dax or Sisko to see them like chop people's heads off? Yeah. I don't know, but I want to know. And I'm sad that we weren't trusted with that version. So that's where I'm at.
As a society, we weren't trusted.
Yeah. 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 One thing we are trusted with, Ben, is the reading of Priority One messages. Why don't we go take care of that bit of business?
Okay.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a couple of Priority One messages here. The first is of a promotional nature. Goes like this. This is not actually a commercial message. I paid more to have another 150 characters. Yes, I know that I could pay 200 for 600 characters, but I am Shimoda now. Please make sure that Adam and Ben read the info line this. I'm sure it will make them laugh. And then in the call to action section, it says, Dear Adam.
Oh, no.
So I think this person didn't use their full character allotment. Even for a personal message.
Wow.
They hoisted themselves on their own petard.
Wow.
And didn't promote anything.
They didn't promote anything. They didn't run it to the end of the character limit even.
Yeah.
They were flagrant in their disregard of the character limit in an opposite way than I was expecting.
Yeah. Just a chaotic neutral promotional message there. Really intense.
Wow. This may be the most threatening message we've ever received. I'm going to be thinking a lot about this one.
Yeah. Yeah, I might be kept up at night.
Thank you for the support. To whoever this was, this person did not leave any identifiable information. Wow. Okay. Our second Priority One message is of a personal nature. Ben, it is from Portland Toilet Guy. It is for Ben and Adam, and the message goes like this. Hi, guys. I was at your Portland, Oregon Greatest Gen Con. I don't know if you remember me, but I was the guy who awkwardly emerged from the toilet you guys were meeting fans in front of. I had some food poisoning that kicked in about 3/4 of the way into the show, and let's just say, the Nimoy method acting bit hit very close to home to me.
Wow!
Loved the show. I think most people who left the Greatest Gen Con show 3/4 the way through would say that they loved it.
Man, that's wild.
We often do our pictures and autographs in front of bathrooms. That's unfortunately just how things play out logistically at these venues.
Yeah, like so many venues that are of the size that we can book and play them. For some reason, the merch table is set right next to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just for us. That's probably just for us, right?
I feel your pain, Portland Toilet Guy. I mean, that's it me. I've been that on more than one occasion of going to a show, so.
Yeah.
Good job by you.
I was that at Adam's 40th birthday, so.
Yeah.
car.
Indeed. Yeah, you left my 40th birthday three quarters of the way through.
Yeah. I was brandoing badly. Well, if you would like to tell us something that happened to your butt or promote something, only not promote anything at all, you know what to do. You head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where it's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message.
Both of which go a long way in supporting The Greatest Generation.
Gotta get that gold press latch. Get that
gold press latch.
Am I right?
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
Virak Kara is my drunk Shimoda. You may remember him as the Jem'Hadar that just stares at Dax for 2 hours. I thought about making Dax my drunk Shimoda for just allowing this.
Uh-huh.
But instead, it's going to Virak Kara for just staring...
yeah.
At her.
I like to watch.
Like, he's clearly very articulate. He has some things to share about his culture.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like this awkwardness may be Dax's fault.
Wow.
Because, and I know this is going to sound like victim blaming here, but maybe...
she doesn't really carry herself like she's being victimized by the awkwardness, though.
maybe culturally, Jem'Hadar have a hard time talking about themselves and just need to be prompted with questions.
Uh-huh.
And so once Dax breaks the ice after 2 hours of staring, I feel like they get along pretty well.
They do. They do indeed.
So that's my drunk Shimoda. Who's yours been?
Mine is Chief O'Brien for being so anti-buffet. He works it into conversations in scenarios where it's not even close to being an issue.
He's as anti-buffet as you are anti-cold sandwich.
Yeah. Don't like them.
Hardliner.
I've designed my life around avoiding them.
Yeah. Got a lot in common. You also give a great speech. just like Miles O'Brien.
Yeah. I can really rouse the troops.
Well, what are we rousing for the next episode of Deep Space Nine, Ben?
We are rousing Season 4, Episode 23, The Quickening. Bashir tries to save a Gamma Quadrant society afflicted with an incurable terminal disease by the Jem'Hadar.
It feels like it's been a while since we've gotten a Bashir-centric episode, so welcome back, Bashir.
Yeah. Welcome back, Bashir.
Why don't welcome we
see... Welcome back.
How do you think we're going to be watching this episode?
That is a great question. Let me dial up our beloved Game of Buttholes, Will of the Prophets. You can follow along at gach.biz/game. We are currently on square 20 in the runabout. And looks like ahead we have a space butthole that would take us back to the Temerian square. We also have a banger that would shoot us forward quite a bit. Oh, no, shoot us back quite a bit. Sorry.
Kind of a lot of potholes ahead on the map.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Dangerous waters right now. So I'm gonna roll these bones. What do you say?
Do it.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
I rolled a 5, Adam, which jumps us past the space butthole onto square 25.
How about that?
A regular old episode for next week.
Safe and sound, thanks to your die roll. If it were me throwing the die, we'd be all over the place. It would be bad. So I'm glad it was your turn.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to next week. In the meantime, I hope people will head to MaximumFun.org/donate if they like the show and want to support it and make sure it keeps being a going concern. It's the main way we support ourselves these days, so we really, really appreciate it.
Free ways to support the show include going to your podcatcher of choice and leaving a 5-thing review. I mean, maybe some places don't use stars. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? You can also connect with us online. Use the hashtag GreatestGen on Twitter and check out Bill Tilly's hilarious trading cards that he makes about every episode and J.J. Lendl's movie posters of every episode of Deep Space Nine he makes before we put our episodes out.
Music consideration for The Greatest Generation is made possible by Adam Ragusea with the help of one DJ Dark Materia.
Check out Adam Ragusea's YouTube page.
Check it out. Make a pizza.
Make a motherfucking pizza.
Cook a steak.
Check out all the other shows on MaximumFun.org, including The Greatest Discovery, which is our new Star Trek podcast, and Friendly Fire, where we review war movies with our buddy John Roderick and talk about history and culture and society and, you know, the nature of masculinity and stuff like that.
And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which takes a hardline stance on vaccinations.
Make it so. MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.